Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, the business of media. Recorded at a Make It Monday forum hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on October 5th, local journalists including Mike Ross from KTUU Channel 2, Pat Doherty from the Anchorage Daily News, Lori Townsend of the Alaska Public Radio Network, Matthew Felling from KTVA Channel 11, Colleen Crinklaw of the Anchorage Press, and Tony Hotfinger from Alaska Dispatch gather to discuss Alaska news in a changing media environment and the business of media. That's coming up next on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans after the news.
Good afternoon and hello. Nice to see everyone on this beautiful October Monday, another nice fall day in Alaska. Welcome to today's Monday Make It Forum. My name is Tony Izzo. I'm the chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and a local Anchorage consultant and businessman. Ever since Anchorage became an official city in the early 1900s, the media has been present to document its evolution. Headlines, radio broadcasts, and television coverage of Alaska's busiest metropolis has kept residents and often the rest of the world up to speed on the city's latest news, stories, and developments. Over the years, as the city continued to grow, competition within the media grew as well. Today, with technology sending many online for the latest up-to-minute local news coverage, what are the traditional news outlets doing to stay in the game? We are trying something different with today's Make It Monday forum this week, and we're putting our local members of the media behind the head table to discuss the growing business and changing business of the media. News leaders from several sectors of media, including print, radio, television, and online news sources, are here to discuss media industry updates, headlines from the past year, local politics. Usually those last two are somehow combined together, headlines and politics, and how social media sites like Twitter and Facebook are changing how they report the news. Now I'd like to introduce today's members of the head table. To my immediate right is Mike Ross, co-anchor of KTUU Channel 2 News Late Edition. To Mike's right is Pat Doherty, senior vice president and editor of the Anchorage Daily News. To Pat's right, we have Lori Townsend, a reporter with Alaska Public Radio Network and host of Alaska News Nightly. And to her right is Matt Felling, KTVA Channel 11's 6 o'clock news anchor and reporter. Then Colleen Crinklaw, advertising representative with the Anchorage Press. Next, Tony Hotfinger, co-founder and editor of AlaskaDispatch.com. We have a lot to cover at this forum today, so let's get started with today's presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome our first speaker for today, KTUU Channel 2 News anchor Mike Ross.
Thank you, Mike. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, first, I'd like to start off with a weather bulletin. The weather sucks today, and we don't need Jackie Purcell to tell us that, huh? Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for inviting me here today. Before I talk about the future, I want to talk about the past a little bit. This coming Friday will be my third anniversary here in Alaska. But before my family and I moved up here, I spent about 25 years covering news in South Louisiana. I got started in the radio news and TV news business in the late 70s and early 80s, a time that some of my young reporter friends like to tease me now when dinosaurs still walk the earth. And a lot has changed since then. Back during that time, many considered it to be the heyday of local TV news. And it was a pretty simple time. If you owned a local TV station, for the most part, it was almost like a license to print money. Profit margins were huge. if from a news standpoint, there wasn't that much competition. You might have one or two other stations in your market you competed head-to-head against. The internet didn't exist. Cable was just coming into its own. And from a reporter's standpoint, we'd go out and cover stories and come back in and put on a 5, 6, and 10 newscast, and people watched, and we made money. Easy schmeasy. Well, then cable came along and kind of sliced up the pie a little bit, and we dealt with that because it was kind of like TV. Then the internet came along, and everything changed. And I remember back in the late 80s and early 90s, our first reaction, I guess, from the traditional media was a lot of us were at skepticism. First, we didn't know what to make of this new media. We weren't quite sure what role it was going to play. And in terms of being a reporter, there were a lot of us who were very skeptical about it. And we'd go out in the field, and we would be covering a hot story. We'd come back to the station, and we'd get all bent out of shape if they would put our story on this new website before it went on TV. Because our reaction was, wait, you're giving away my story to the competition, and nobody's going to watch tonight. But gradually over time, we began to see that this internet thing wasn't going to go away, and that we could use it to our advantage. It was another method for us to deliver the message and to keep our community informed. So that's what was back then. So what's happened since? Well, over time, especially during the 90s, many stations went from being skeptical or unsure what to do with their internet presence to embracing it. And I can tell you that Channel 2 and our parent company, Shure's Communication, has embraced the internet. It is just as important, in our view, as our on-air product. We produce web-only content. We try to use our very talented photographers and reporters to produce segments exclusively for our main website, ktu.com. And also, if you notice, there's a little banner that says Go to AK. Well, that's a new website we launched a few months ago called gotoak.com. And it is, we think, just an exceptional venue to tell Alaskans and the rest of the world about recreational and sport activities here in the last frontier. It has been hugely successful, and it's also a moneymaker for us, too. So in terms of how we do business in the news business, how has the new media affected the old media? Well, first of all, again, we overcame that skepticism. We have embraced the reality that we face today. And it has been a challenge because it was really a challenge to the old business model that we had before. The increased competition, it's slicing up the ad revenue pie into smaller and smaller pieces. So we had to learn how to take advantage of that. From a journalist perspective, we had to overcome that feeling that we were giving away our stories on the internet to, this is where we're going to break our stories. Our deadline is going to go from 5, 6, and 10 to the deadline is right now. There are a lot of old war horses like me who have jumped on this bandwagon over the years, but we also have a crop of new young journalists, and you'll see a lot of them on the air at Channel 2, Jason Lamb, Ted Land, Ashton Goodell, who have never known a world without the internet, and it is home to them. And when they go out and cover a story, they're not just doing it for the TV side. They're doing it for the website as well. And they'll go out on a story as it's happening during the day, and they've got their little iPhones in their pockets, and as things are happening around them, they're snapping images and shooting them back to the station to post on our website. They're texting like mad men and mad girls to get the information back. And we know that every day we're in a dogfight with the ADN's website and upstarts like Alaska Dispatch. And we know that's the lay of the land now. And again, our younger reporters have really embraced this, and they keep us moving in the right direction. We've also expanded, as part of our effort to embrace the new media, we've expanded our staff at Channel 2. We have a core staff of very talented web editors and producers who coordinate with our TV division. And, you know, we're all one and the same now. When our crews are coming in from the field, our photographers are immediately going in and capturing video to post on the website. Our reporters, as I mentioned, are sending in information to post immediately. And we try to use the website to steer people to our 5, 6, and 10 newscasts. You know, we'll give them the essentials as fast as we can on the website, and then we try to give them the visual side of it during our traditional newscasts. You know, there are a lot of people who feel that traditional media, like local TV newscasts, are on their last legs. that the internet will be the death of what we've known as traditional media, especially on TV. And I think that's a huge exaggeration, and I don't believe that for 1 minute, for a few reasons. I think there will always be a segment of the population who, like hundreds of years ago, will want to gather around the campfire and see what's going on in their community. And I think TV does that. I think there will always be a segment of the population that will like to have things just presented to them instead of having to work to find it, you know, by sitting there and clicking. I think there will always be a segment of the population that will just want to casually watch what's going on in their community rather than having to sort through our website or somebody else's. And, you know, there are people like my mom who are just technologically challenged who don't want to mess with a computer. I also am firmly convinced, having gone through, before I came here, I worked in New Orleans. And there is one role for local TV and radio broadcasters that I think is absolutely essential, and that's in a time of crisis. I covered Hurricane Katrina, went through that whole experience, and I can tell you firsthand that when disaster hits a community, the cell phones disappear, the internet disappears. The only thing that stood standing was our TV station and our sister radio station. And a lot of people evacuated, but a lot of people stayed. And I know from being out there and watching that when they needed us, we were there. I ran into people who were huddled around TV sets being run by a generator, or people in their cars listening to our sister radio station because that was the only source of information they could get. And if nothing else, I think it is just vitally important that we local broadcasters stay on our feet and be prepared to serve our community, because a lot of this high-tech stuff, when the poo-poo hits the fan, it doesn't work. So that's, you know, my view of it. I'm firmly convinced that the future will be a blend of people using their channel changers to turn on their traditional TV and using their computers. I mean, one day it may all be one device. But I think there's still a need for storytellers. I think there's still a need for people to go out and gather the pictures and the images and the stories. And people want to read the news, but they also want to see it. And I think that's where TV comes into play. And I also feel that, you know, based on what we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years, you know, we have to adapt or die. And I think the TV business is getting it now. We understand that. We put our heads in the sand for quite some time back in the 90s, but we get it now. And we're learning that you can make money at it too. So that's really not my side of it, but, you know, that's how I see it. So, again, thank you very much for inviting me. It's an exciting time to be in the TV news business. It's a scary time too, because what we have known traditionally over the last 20, 30 years is changing almost daily. But we feel we're up to the challenge. We feel we're here to serve our community, and we feel we're going to learn as we go. So thank you very much.
Now I'd like to introduce Mr. Pat Doherty, editor and vice president of the Anchorage Daily News.
Thanks, Tony, and good afternoon to all of you. Thanks for the invitation, the opportunity to come and speak to you. I think Mike got the discussion off in a very good way. I'm going to now tell you a little bit about how what he had to say about broadcast relates to the print business. I'm sure you've all heard that life has been tough for newspaper companies for the last several years. You might even say brutal. And though things are looking up, the hard times do not seem to be over yet. To quickly recap just the last 36 months, newspaper revenues have fallen by almost half. Paid circulation is down by double digits. At least seven newspaper companies, national newspaper companies, have filed for bankruptcy. A couple of well-known big city newspapers have closed for good, and newspaper stock prices are down by 60 to 90%. That's a lot of bad news. Some people think it means the end of newspapers. I think they're wrong, although I do think our business is in a time of seismic change in technology, consumer habits, and economics. We all face the challenge of change. The question is, who will adapt well enough and fast enough to survive? I believe my company will be one of those that does. And it is media companies that we're talking about, not just newspapers. The radio and TV industries, as Mike has suggested, have seen huge drops in revenues as their audiences keep fragmenting and shrinking. But it's newspapers that have been hardest hit. We are dealing with three separate crises all at the same time. The biggest, of course, has been the cratering of the national economy. When times are good, industries that depend on advertising do well. But when the economy falters, customers cut back on advertising. In even a mild recession, newspapers get pinched. And the current recession is far from mild. So newspapers would have suffered had we only had the recession to cope with. But newspapers got whacked by several other dynamics. One was the growth of the internet and the migration of advertising, especially private party classified advertising, from paid in print to free online. With that shift, billions of dollars in newspaper revenue just evaporated. Even while that was going on, newspaper companies, riding high during the boom, took on a lot of new debt to buy other newspapers, to buy radio and television stations, or to build new buildings and install presses. Whatever the reason, many newspaper companies have huge debts to service, and the timing was not good. One last thing. Newspaper readers became more and more comfortable getting news on the internet, where the content of almost every newspaper was available with the click of a mouse. Since then, consumers have increasingly demanded access to news whenever and however they want it, and they don't seem to want to pay for it. The combination of circumstances has coalesced into a life-or-death crisis for newspapers all over the United States. For those of us in the business, the result has been scary, painful, frustrating. We've been forced to cut costs and increase efficiency. Reductions that would have been unthinkable 5 years ago are now commonplace. But had we not acted decisively, we would not still be a profitable business, and therefore we would not be in business. And even in these tough times, there are bright spots. While the ADN's print audience is down, for example, our total audience is actually up. When we combine our local print readership with our Alaska online audience, we have more readers than we've ever had. On top of that, we have a sizable non-Alaska audience that was never there before. So while we continue to print a newspaper every 24 hours, we've expanded tremendously online. We routinely do things now that until a few years ago, we had never done. Things like video and audio presentations and narrated slideshows, photo galleries. If you haven't seen this material, which is available on the website, you're really missing some excellent work. And it didn't exist just a few years ago. And we have other new tools. We can supplement our journalism by posting original source documents to support and elaborate on the stories that we're producing. We can include things like hidden camera videotapes from the FBI. If you want to see it for yourself, you can watch it for yourself. We send email alerts for breaking news and steer readers to interesting Alaska stories that are produced by organizations other than ADN. We've created avenues for much more engaged readership. Where once we had just letters to the editor, now readers regularly and instantly comment on individual stories, argue with editorials, contribute information, and send us stories and send us videos and photos. And as technology and the demands of consumers continue to change, we will too. I predict you'll see increasing focus on smartphones and digital readers. ADN.com will soon be available on your iPhone and your Kindle, and we will continue to experiment with social media like Facebook and Twitter. All of these changes create opportunities for new ways of doing business and making the money to support our core mission of public service journalism. For example, we have a partnership with Yahoo, fairly new, that allows us to target advertising to interested consumers in ways that we could have once not imagined. Our company leads the industry in the percentage of its overall revenue that comes from its online operations. So we're dealing with the present challenges, looking forward, not backward. Our core business remains the gathering, verifying, packaging, and distribution of news and information. Ink on paper is a very good way to do that, but it's not nearly the only way. This recession will end. Our operations will remain smaller and more efficient, and we will find ways to make a stronger business out of a large and growing online audience. Our company believes in this business and the mission of journalism. We're committed to it. We've been practicing it for 150 years, and we plan to be around to practice it for a good while yet. Be happy to answer your questions when the time comes. Thank you very much.
Now I would like to introduce Lori Townsend. Lori is a reporter with Alaska Public Radio Network and host of Alaska News Nightly. Lori?
Thank you. Hello. As I've been thinking about what to discuss with you today, the phrase, don't text and drive, keeps coming into my mind. And I guess because it's sort of a great kind of a verbal illustration of how much media has changed, certainly in the more than 18 years that I've been in public broadcasting. Everyone is, of course, familiar with its precursor, the important don't drink and drive, but until just a very few years ago, the idea of texting and driving would not have made any sense to us. And yet now we have a state law in place to prohibit it. When I started in media, I wrote for a small town paper in northern Wisconsin, and then began freelance documentary projects and other reporting projects at a tribal public radio station, WOJB, on the Lacouture Ojibwe Reservation. And my media tools in those days were a yellow pad and pencils, I preferred, and notes were painstakingly transferred onto a sharp computer or a typewriter, actually, not a computer, and using a lot of whiteout. And for radio, a cassette deck was my field recorder in those days, and then that had to be transferred in real time back at the station, edited with razor blades and a lot of four-letter language, and mixed on reel-to-reel. Now all the files that we work with are digital files. In my early days, I didn't even need to know how to correctly spell someone's name because it was just went out on the air. And now everything that we do matters, including spellings, because it all goes to the web now. All of our stories are online. We're in a multimedia format. And the only time I carried a camera 15 years ago was when I was doing print work, and I could make a little extra money if I sold a couple photos. And so I would carry a camera along for that, but it didn't relate at all to my broadcast work. Now we're expected to at least take a still shot camera out with us when we're doing radio stories, and preferably we should take a video camera. We're trying to learn those skills. I've gone through 5 generations of field recording equipment, from cassette to reel-to-reel, DAT, mini disc, and now we use flashcards, and there's new technology coming out every day. 10 years ago, I helped launch a small nonprofit here in Anchorage that developed a national daily program called Independent Native News. And it was carried on more than 100 stations around the nation and Canada and was delivered solely via the internet. And I don't know if we were the first in the nation to convince broadcast stations to take files off the web and air them on their stations, but I know we were in the first in Alaska to disseminate a national program in that manner. And it's incredible for me to consider that today with the explosion of online media. In writing up my thoughts for today, I timed my talk using NewsBoss to make sure I didn't run too long. This is a software program that we use that times things to the second, as opposed to the old method of paper and pencil and a running math tally in your head, which is not a strong point of mine. It's why I make my living with words. And so these advances have certainly made our jobs easier in the newsroom, at the APRN newsroom. And for those of you unfamiliar with APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network and APRN is part of APTI, Alaska Telecommunications, and it's comprised of KSKA 91.1 FM, KAKM Channel 7, and APRN drives daily news programming for about 26 stations around the state. Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and Alaska News Nightly reach more households in more communities than any other state media. I hope I'm not starting a fight here by saying that, but I believe that's true. We work hard to provide news coverage for and about Alaskans, especially in rural Alaska, where there's a lot going on in resource development, struggling village economies, healthcare access, the back-and-forth debate between subsistence users and sports hunting and fishing proponents, and increasingly the fallout on animals, fish, land, and sea from climate change. There's a lot going on out there, and we're trying to provide coverage of those issues. Using new media tools has certainly made our jobs easier. I no longer have to keep a supply of razor blades to edit tape, and on Saturday I watched a live stream of the Native American Music Awards from New York on my computer at home. We saw the influence of the online community in the last presidential election, and bloggers have had impacts on everything from pushing forward on Alaska corruption cases to fundraising for politicians and causes. More and more people are becoming citizen journalists, and I applaud the civic involvement. But I also have a word of caution. I have concerns about what this online immediacy may mean in the future, as people get more of their news, or sometimes what they think passes for news, from the internet. There's more possibility for errors, people throwing up news flashes and alerts, this just in, which I've always wanted to say on air and haven't had a chance to yet. And that used to be an expression that was used by a news person as he or she was handed an update on camera. But now it's delivered hundreds of times a day online. And as this happens, there's unfortunately more chance for error, and also for agenda-driven information that passes to the untrained eye as news. I have conversations all the time with very intelligent people who find things online and wonder why we haven't covered it. And I point out that just because it carries a date and a proper headline and looks like valid news, if you can't trace it back to a source or an organization that is a reputable news organization, then it's suspect in my mind. Not to say that there aren't good citizen journalists out there. That's essentially one of the ways that I got started in reporting. Concern over local issues, doing my own investigation. But that's the key, is investigation. And too much of what is tossed online is driven by a desire for a particular outcome or just created completely out of whole cloth, as lots of things that we've seen online. We are on Twitter at APTIAPRN. And although I don't know if it's impacted our member base or generated more income, I do know that it indicates people are tracking what we do. We get updates each day that more and more people are following us on Twitter. And online tracking is becoming a marketing godsend. In his excellent book, The Numerati, Stephen Baker talks about sloshing oceans of data from emails and downloads to sales receipts. In a single month, he says, Yahoo alone gathers 110 billion pieces of data about its customers. Unbelievable. Until we were online and started seeing what stories generated the most interest, we really had no way of knowing how well our coverage resonated or not with our audience. outside of the occasional angry phone call or letter or someone praising our work, we really didn't know if what we were reporting on were the things that people found the most interesting and relevant to their lives. Now there's ways of counting and tracking how people use news online, gauging how popular particular topics and stories are. And although that can be interesting because it's not always easy to know what really clicks with people, such as a story we ran a few months back about great white sharks wandering into Alaskan waters. And it was our top story for a few months. It was kind of funny. And so this is inspiring, and it's nice to know this, but it's also concerning. This tracking may in the future lead to new discussions in marketing departments about what people want to read and hear about, which could raise ethical dilemmas for cash-strapped news organizations yearning for higher ratings. Let's cover more shark stories and less unemployment and homeless issues. And pressure on newsrooms to produce that which will generate income may come to bear. Today in our small newsroom, we are constantly asking, who else do we need to talk to about this issue, this story? What other facet of it do we need to cover to make sure that we're getting at all sides and helping folks get educated about these issues? We argue the importance on their merit and not on their marketability. We're engaged in a vast social experiment, and I wonder what the effects will be in the future. We've gone from a time when the most trusted man in America was Walter Cronkite to a generation where the most trusted newsman is Comedy Central's Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. And what will people believe is a valid and trustworthy news source in a decade from now? What happens as news organizations get whittled down and politicians and others are left to create policy behind closed doors without the light of good journalism shining on their dealings? We've seen some of that happen, of what happens here in Alaska, with fewer good reporters out there listening to people who call and say, have you heard about this? And that concerns me, because it means we could be in trouble. I do love the fact that more people are getting involved, and maybe I'm just getting old and stodgy, but I think we need caution in how we read, write, and interact online. And I believe it raises the importance ever higher for good journalism from trusted sources, such as those news organizations represented by the people that you see right here at this table today. Thank you.
Please join me in welcoming Mr. Matt Felling, 6 o'clock news anchor with KTVA Channel 11.
Thank you very much for the applause. And thank you, by the way, for saying whiteout. I haven't thought about whiteout for about 10 to 12 years. And that's why we're here, honestly, today. And that's why I was invited to participate in the panel, is because I'm something of a media Unitarian. I have been, in my short existence on this orb, White House correspondent, D.C. Capitol correspondent, NPR host, NPR guest, cable news host, cable news guest. But the reason that I'm really happy to talk here is that for a decade, give or take, I was a think tank analyst talking all about media issues and how the media is changing right in front of our very eyes. And that is what has informed me in my work at KTVA.com and KTVA CBS 11, because after 8 to 10 years of picking apart at what the media is doing and how they're getting things wrong and the traps that they're falling into, I got the chance to come up here and to get it right. And I got the chance to come up here and start putting my advice, unsolicited or otherwise, to practice. And I think we need to understand that there is good news out there. And this isn't Pollyanna. This isn't spin. There are studies, give or take, whether you believe them, but there is obvious data out there that shows we are more plugged in than ever before. Whether you get it online, whether you listen in your car, whether you go download a podcast to get an hour's worth of broadcasting, you tune into local news, you tune into national news, whatever the reason is and whatever your motivation is, we are watching and listening and knowing and clicking more than ever. Now, the challenge is, as we've seen in the last 15 years, how to survive in this environment. Because the other part of the good news is that despite the fact that to a certain extent, we are cannibalizing ourselves, we are providing what we do and what we put our work, blood, sweat, and tears into, we are giving it away. We are still surviving. We are still succeeding in passing along information to people. And I think that there's something of a silver lining there. And in terms of industry trends, Google is actually right now, the brilliant brains at Google are working on a pay platform to come to the rescue. Pat, I told you about this, to come to the rescue of newspapers, so to even do like micro payments, like a penny a click, 2 cents per click. So there might be help on the horizon, which is, as far as I'm concerned, very good news. And we need to embrace, as Mike was mentioning, we need to embrace the immediacy. You used to be able to have film at 11. You used to be able to have stay tuned for more. Those days are over. And if we have learned anything from social networking, from Tweeterville, you need to give what you have at the moment you have it. Even if it kills you, even if you want to just curl up in the fetal position because it's a scoop, and you used to be able to cling onto that scoop and hold on to it and show it off, you need to give it when you have it. Because it is, even if you are, just 2 weeks ago, there was a conference call with Senator Lisa Murkowski explaining her position on EPA emissions. There was Reuters, Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, Washington Times, and me on the call. And she would say something. I thought, that's pithy, that's quick, that captures what she's saying, that captures her stance. And I just tweeted it immediately on the spot. And I did it a few times. And it's just, if you need to get over the fact that you are giving away what you do. And you need to establish the fact that you are branding yourself as the person in the know. And that's the whole social media revolution. And social media is all about, the reason they call it social media, it's about the relationships you have with the readers. We have had a few stories at CBS 11 where we just send a little tweet into the Tweeterverse saying, hey, Alaska Railroad employees, what are you hearing? Will anybody go on camera? Will anybody talk to us about what's happening over there? Or starting this week, CBS 11 is actually going to start an exclusive weekly conversation alternating weeks with Senators Begich and Senators Murkowski. And we are going to solicit ideas for questions from people so that the social media is actually like is actually a scene. And it actually is a two-way street, because gone are the days of just a one-lane highway of news. And Twitter is being tossed around here. Let me just give you a quick background, or 20 seconds. It is a website where you just kind of shoot 140 characters worth of information out there into the web. Whatever you have, if you can keep it within 140 characters, you can just send it out, and whoever is interested in you will click and say, I want to keep posted of what you have to tell me. That's what Twitter is. And so you need to make it, you need to take full advantage of that. And the Anchorage Twitter scene is actually pretty darn vibrant. And what Twitter is doing is it is turning everything into the world's largest cocktail party. There is a cluster against the wall in the corner talking about Spenard Roadhouse. There's another cluster over there talking about who wants to go to the movies or grab dessert. And then there's another cluster that you want to be a part of if you're a news person. You want to be saying, here's what's happening right now. Here's what's happening that's very interesting. I jump all over the climate change issue whenever I find anything. New York Times, Ethiopia.net, wherever I find it. I want to convey that to people because it's such a pressing issue here. But you also don't want to beat a dead horse and be a one-trick pony, a one-note piano. You want to be the person who, climate change, global gasoline and natural resource market, Esquire voted Kate Beckinsale world's sexiest woman. You want to be the interesting person at the cocktail party. You want to keep it lively, but you don't want to trivialize what you have to say. And that's what I actually learned when I was a blogger for CBSNews.com in Washington, is keep people guessing, keep giving them a balanced diet of information, a little bit of fun, protein of real news, some roughage of hard-to-process information, but just keep them informed and give them a well-balanced media diet, and they'll keep coming to you. And I know that we are running very short on time, and the questions are going to be extremely informative. So that is my presentation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Matt. Now I'd like to introduce Colleen Crinklaw. Colleen is an advertising representative with the Anchorage Press. Thank you.
I feel a little out of my element because everybody here is in the broadcast industry. Everybody here is the people who write the news, and I'm the one who sells the ads. But I'm going to do my best because my boss told me to show up. So good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Colleen Crinklaw, and I'm an advertising account executive for the South Anchorage area, representing Anchorage Publishing Group, which is the Anchorage Press, the Matsu Valley Frontiersman, and the Military Papers, which is the Sourdough Sentinel and the Alaska Post. I've been in advertising for the last several years, starting out when I was 17 in the most base form of advertising, dancing in a gorilla suit on the side of the road. Which was my first job ever, advertising at its finest. and now I'm working for the Anchorage Press, which is our alternative weekly. It is one of Anchorage's most vibrant publications. It is one of the most loved publications in the state. And before I get too far into it, I want to talk a little bit about what alternative media actually means. It means that we like to push buttons that nobody else really wants to push. We are the ones who bring in the provocative media. We're the ones who carry the Dan Savage column, despite the fact that a lot of people won't read us because of it. We are the ones that mean we're the ones who push boundaries, and we don't take no for an answer. I am the account executive that's covered in tattoos. It's just the way alternative media works. We are the ones who are looking forward when a lot of people are still struggling and trying to figure out what do we do, where are we going from here. Anchorage Press is on Facebook, Anchorage Press is on MySpace, and we are on Twitter, and we're on Twitter 24 hours a day because Brendan won't leave me alone. But my job as an advertising account executive is to work for my clients, for you out there. My job is to make sure that every dollar you spend with me turns into $5 or $10 or however many dollars it takes to make your business succeed. People always ask me, how much does advertising cost? And I tell them, nothing if you do it right. So on your tables, I've left some copies of this week's press. It is one of the greatest tools you can use to market your business. Print advertising in an alternative weekly delivers results through a strong, loyal readership. We print 20,000 copies of the press weekly, but we have over 40,000 readers that read the press every single week. About a third of them are online only, a third of them are online and print, and then a third of them are print only. We reach pretty much everybody. If you ask somebody, what does a press reader look like? I'm a press reader. Matt's a press reader. My boss is a press reader, and he is nothing like me. Which I can say because he's not here. She's a press reader. I see press readers in the audience right now actually reading the press. So yay, I did my job well. Over the last year at the press, we've brought in dedicated journalists who are committed to getting the news out of what's happening in Alaska. If it's happening in Alaska, it is in the Anchorage Press. We've been covering the entire step down of Palin from the gubernatorial race, from the gubernatorial seat. We covered the emotional range of what was going on both sides of Ordinance 64. We are covering right now in this week stuff about healthcare in foster families and what's going on in our communities. Brendan Joel Kelly, one of our associate editors, did a page last week or the week before about the care of patients in our one methadone clinic. We are out there digging up the dirt and making sure that people's voices are heard. That is our job. It's been an exciting year in print, and I'm glad to be back in the middle of it. I was out of print media for a brief time, missed it, came back. As an advertiser, it remains your best way to reach your customers because you can turn on the TV and hope that you're going to see an ad for what you want to buy. But if you want to buy a mattress, you're going to open up a paper and look for mattress sales. It's going to be your best way to reach your customers. It's always there. It's tangible. It's rewarding. Whether it's finding that coupon that you desperately need or finding a picture of yourself or your loved one in an article that we've done, newspapers both alternative weeklies and daily papers like the Daily News, they're rewarding. They're in your hands and they're never going to go away, regardless of what internet says, regardless of what the media seems to say. Print newspapers have been around since printing was invented, and we're not going anywhere. That's pretty much all I have, because I spend most of my time listening to your questions and your problems and not doing a whole lot of talking myself. So I'm going to go that way now.
I don't think Colleen would have any trouble at all in broadcast media. Now I'd like to introduce Tony Hopfinger. Tony is the co-founder and editor of Alaska Dispatch. Mr. Hopfinger.
Thanks a lot for having me today. It's great that the Chamber invited Alaska Dispatch here, and we're happy to be here because we're pretty new. Probably a lot of you haven't heard of us yet. And probably mostly what I'll talk about today with you is just who we are, what our mission is, and where we're headed. I guess how we're different than the rest of the media here. A little bit about myself. I worked for newspapers in the 1990s in Idaho and California. And then I came up here in 1999 to work for the Anchorage Daily News. And then I went to edit the Anchorage Press in 2005. For the last few years, I've been a correspondent for Bloomberg News and Newsweek magazine, and I'm currently working on a book with my wife, Amanda Coyne, on politics and oil in Alaska. So it's a political corruption book. Amanda is also a co-founder of Alaska Dispatch, and she teaches journalism and writing at APU. So my background is newspapers, and when I went to freelancing in 2005 and started working for Bloomberg and Newsweek, I really started missing local journalism. A lot of stories that I would do would be for a national audience, but I wouldn't necessarily be able to do the stories I want to do locally. I live here and don't plan on going anywhere, and so I'd come across stories every once in a while that I'd be like, wow, this is a good local story, and I have nowhere to place it. And I think the same was true for Amanda and friends of ours and others. So sort of seeing the dynamic and how things were changing, as well as having a brother who's a really skilled computer programmer, I talked him into helping me develop an online site, which is that there, Alaska Dispatch. And we started in August 2008. It looked much different back then. It was two columns and just a couple sections to it. We didn't have any money, no resources, so we just did this on our own, basically getting contributors from around the state to write articles or commentaries, and then Amanda and I would supplement with our reporting. Basically, the idea, I think, behind the Dispatch was that we saw a growing gap in news reporting in the state, a combination of downsizing, corporate ownership that demands huge profits, bad business deals, bad management, and perhaps most critically, a lack of creativity in media, both here and elsewhere, as they struggle to adjust to the internet, left an opportunity. And sites like ours are relatively new. They're popping up around the country, local news sites that a lot of out-of-work journalists are starting up. So our aim was to, I think, fill a niche in reporting here. There just aren't as many reporters in the state anymore, and there are a lot of gaps in the news. In particular, you see the disparity in Alaska when it comes to coverage of rural Alaska, oil and gas, state politics, arts and culture. All these subjects have suffered. Alaska Dispatch is our answer to helping fill that void. Back when we started, as I mentioned, we had a number of friends who helped out, and we also did rely on citizen journalism quite a bit. It was sort of an experiment, and the idea being empowering people to write their own stories and to share their own corners of the state, if you will. So the idea was sort of to be like a portal where lots of different voices could be come into play and people can contribute, and that the acknowledgement that reporters are not the only ones who can do journalism. But a lot has changed since then. This past summer, Alice Rogoff became our publisher, and Amanda and I sold off a majority stake in our company. You may know Alice for her involvement in various Alaska Native nonprofits, causes. She's the founder of Alaska House, Alaska Native Arts Foundation. But most important to us is her journalism background. She's a former CFO of U.S. News World and Report and a former assistant publisher of the Washington Post. And thanks to Alice, we now have a staff of 9 journalists and resources to do our jobs, offices. And all this has happened in the past 8 weeks. So a lot of changes. We have on our team now Jill Burke, who used to work at Channel 2, former weekend anchor and reporter. Rena Delbridge from the Fairbanks Newsminer. One of the best bloggers in the state, Maya Nolan. Josh Sal, who's from Anchorage originally and worked for the New York Post. And Craig Medred, he used to work at the Anchorage Daily News. So how are we different than the rest of the media? Well, I think the biggest difference, obviously, is that we're online only. And we don't need a radio or television signal or a print press or fleet of vans to deliver our product. We don't really even need offices. We just need computers and access to our website. So basically, we're less encumbered, and the cost of running a traditional media operation are far greater than running a website like ours. And that means that we can put more of our resources, more of our attention to the news product itself. We rely on advertising and sponsorship like all the rest here, but we just don't have the same overhead cost, I guess, as everyone else, in the sense that we're not we don't have 2 vehicles for our news. We don't have a newspaper, we don't, and an internet site. We just have the internet only, and that allows a lot of freedom in what we do. We're also different in that we're locally owned, and we're not beholden to a board of directors or a corporation that demands huge profits. That makes us agile and more adaptable. We don't really have, I would say, a set plan in what we do. We're in the sense, willing to change it up as needed. I think that's one of the mistakes that the media has made over the last 15 years is getting locked in ways of doing things and not being agile in the sense of being able to make changes when you need to the technology. I think that's the other big thing with us is that we really embrace technology. And a lot of what we do now is based on an open source code platform that allows us to basically run our internet site. It doesn't cost any money. It's a free programming language out there. So that's another kind of new thing compared to customized sites out there and at other news operations. And perhaps probably the biggest difference you'll see in our site is the presentation. Not only do we have stories that other media don't, I think we have more personality. I think if you look at like Slate.com or Newsweek.com, that's sort of what we're going for. So more of an online magazine as opposed to an online newspaper. In short, we're young, we're playful, we're serious, we have lots of great talent right now, and we're fired up, and so stay tuned and start checking us out. Thanks.
Okay, please help me again to thank today's speakers, Mike Ross, Pat Doherty, Lori Townsend, Matt Felling, Colleen Crinklaw, and Tony Hopfinger.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to a panel discussion on the business of media, hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Representing various media outlets located in Anchorage, Mike Ross from KTUU Channel 2, Pat Doherty from the Anchorage Daily News, Lori Townsend of the Alaska Public Radio Network, Matthew Felling from KTVA Channel 11, Colleen Crinklaw of the Anchorage Press, and Tony Hopfinger from Alaska Dispatch, each spoke on their news organizations, where they stand today, and where they hope to be in the future. The Business of Media was recorded at the Anchorage Chamber's Make It Monday Forum on October 5th, 2009. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week.
To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.